Blog Talk Radio.
Are you due for a relationship makeover? If you had the power to wave a magic wand, would you use it to improve your relationship? Well, there may be some hope. You're about to embark upon a journey. A journey that may prove to be vital in improving your relationship, whether it be with your spouse, significant other, children, co-worker, family, friends, or even yourself. A journey that if you simply open your mind to desiring a positive change in your relationship by listening to this show, it just might happen. You're about to take a journey into the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Warning, the show can be contagious.
Okay, hello, and welcome to this edition of the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Jesse Walker. I'm going to be with you for the next 90 minutes tonight. We've got a fantastic show planned for you tonight. I mean, you know, I can't stop laughing over here because of the things that go on behind the scenes on our studio in preparation for each show. So we've got, I mean, that's just how excited we are when we're doing these shows. So listen, you're in for a wonderful treat tonight. We're bringing on a brand new co-host that's also going to be joining us tonight. And, of course, we've got our routine, our regulars. We are so excited. We're waiting for Ms. Cross to press one on her dial. It's always good to have her. And so many of our callers and our listeners, we've got a fantastic show for you tonight, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about things. Let me go ahead and bring in, just before I bring in Ms. Cross, I want to say that we are still on our mission focus of subscribers. If you want to subscribe to get a copy of all of the stories that we send out, the stories that we present over the air, they're all inspired by true events. They are all, every one of those stories are inspired by true events. You can certainly get a copy of it. You can call me directly at the office, 786-399-6111. You can certainly get in touch with us and get your copy. It's only $2.50 a week, $10 a month, minimum 3 months, and you get a brand new story every week, inspired by true stories, and then you get some other perks and benefits as well. You don't want to miss out on this here because it can save you a lot of time and headache in your marriage, in your relationship, in your dating, and so forth and so on. All right, so you can even ask me about that over the air, and part of that goes out to support our cause, our mission. We give a percentage to go into the community for community projects, and then I match that out of my pocket as well. Let me go ahead and bring in Ms. Cross. Ms. Cross, it's always a pleasure to have you. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. We've got a great show for tonight.
Hey, everyone. Good evening. I hope everyone had an amazing day.
Yes, of course. Ms. Cross, why don't you go ahead and give your commercial break?
Okay, yes, everyone. My name is Camila Cross. I am a licensed clinical social worker. I do provide psychoeducational services as well as therapeutic services to those who are now suffering, unfortunately, with depression and anxiety. I know there's a lot going on in our world, different stressors. So if you guys are interested in obtaining services, you can definitely give me a call. My number is 954-825-8500, 954-825-8500. Happy to let you know I do take clients who are private pay, but I'm also now accepting United and Aetna as well. So if you guys are interested, you can definitely give me a shout. You can email me as well. I'm at yourworthllc@gmail.com. Again, yourworthllc@gmail.com.
Okay, excellent. Let me go ahead and bring in our other co-host. Let's go ahead and bring in Benny from the Block. Benny from the Block is always a joy to have you on the air with us as well.
Thank you, thank you, and good evening, everyone. It is a great, great day. I hope everybody had an awesome day, and I'm excited to get on with the show.
Excellent, excellent. All right. We, Lady C may be a little late tonight joining us. She's out on an errand. She may be a little late in joining us tonight, so we'll bring her in when she gets in. But Ms. Cross and Benny from the Block, I want to present to you all a someone who will be also joining us all the way from the Peach Tree City, I guess they call it, or Peach State, Peach Tree State, all the way from Atlanta. She's going to be joining us on occasion on the Thursday evening shows and also on the Friday night shows. And I want you all to go ahead and give me a warm welcome for Miss J. Miss J is going to be joining us and coming on board. Ms. Cross, why don't you go ahead and say hello to Miss J. Ms. Cross?
Sorry. Hi, Miss J. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
And Benny from the Block, why don't you go ahead and say hello to Miss J. She's going to be joining us as well.
Hello and good evening, Ms. J. It's a pleasure to have you on with our on the show, and it's exciting to have a fresh and new voice. So welcome, welcome, and we're glad to have you.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited about joining the show and sharing my thoughts, and thank you.
Okay, so Ms. J., welcome here as well, and I want you to know, Ms. J., we really enjoyed this show. I think I can say that on behalf of all of us. And, of course, the opinions that are expressed are those of my own, all of my co-hosts, and it will certainly be your opinion. And even when we don't agree all the time, we certainly respect each other's opinions. And the information that's presented to all of our listeners is for educational purposes and informational purposes only. It is never legal advice. It's not psychological advice. If you're looking for those areas, then we're asking that you always go ahead and seek the appropriate professional in that particular field. So the information, once again, that's always presented on this air is for educational purposes only and should be perceived as such. Having said that, we are now going to be joined by Lady C. Lady C, come on in, and while you're coming in, I want you to go ahead and give a welcome to Miss J, who's also going to be joining us.
Well, hi, Miss J. I'm glad that you guys are joining us tonight. Hello, everybody. I hope everybody has had a fabulous week. Because I had a fabulous week because I had a death in my family. But it's been a good week, though. It could have been worse. But I'm ready for the show. If everybody else is ready for the show, so I'm ready to hear everything you guys have to say.
All right. Awesome. We're certainly sorry to hear about the death in your family, and we'll keep you in our prayers. All right. Having said all of that, now, tonight's topic is, and this is a very passionate one, I mean, because even the United States talks about some form of mental illness, depression, and this is always a passionate and a deep topic. And also a sensitive topic. Tonight's topic is, the word is could. Could your environment or your routine cause or contribute to depression? Could your environment or your routine, for that matter, cause or contribute to depression? But so let me start out with you, before we go to the story tonight, let me ask you, I know that you work in mental health. I mean, could a person's environment or their daily routine contribute to their cause or even contribute to them being depressed?
Most definitely. You know, a lot of times, you know, as they say, we are products of our environment. We can become a product of our environment. So if you're in a situation, you know, and you're unhappy in the situation or in the environment, then, yes, it can definitely play a part in how you feel in your overall. You know, I don't know. I always looked at those coworkers that were like superly, overly controlling at work, and I used to always say, "Well, there's a lot going on at home," because a lot of times
right.
people behave one way in one environment, they kind of over overcompensating than another, right? Sometimes, you know, you'll see people, like, and especially working in the field of education, you'll see a lot of kids that act out in school, and you're kind of like, you know, why are they always fighting? Why are they always so short-tempered? And it's usually a lot going on at home. So most definitely environment can affect, you know, how we perceive and how we behave.
All right. Having said that, we're going to actually stand by. Ben from Block, I want to bring you in just before we go to the story. Now, when we talk about environment, environment can be broad or it can be narrow. So, I mean, you know, tonight we want to cover various areas of environment and routine for that matter. So we can talk about the home environment, you know, where a couple resides. We're talking about where someone grew up. We're talking about community. So, Benny from the Block, if you were to take this and surmise it, what would you say environment cover or extends something that I may not have covered? And why is that so important?
Well, the environment can extend from many different areas when you're talking about the home. It could be that special place, like in your bedroom. And a lot of times we bring things in our bedrooms that delineate us from having better, healthy mental awareness and mental conversations with our spouses, our loved ones, our significant others. Simple things like having a television in a room distracts you from being able to have that intimate conversation with your spouse or significant other. Other thing is something that they've been talking about recently is the phone thing, where you're allowing your phone to be a manipulator of your time, your energy. You're on your phone raising through watching everybody else's life, but the person next to you or the person sitting in the room is being neglected. So a lot of it has to do with what we allow to come into our special places, our homes, our environments, our social beings, just even our vacations. We don't even know how to just relax and enjoy vacations with people. So, yeah, it's created a definite social disconnect, and it leads to mental separation and mental disorder.
All right. Certainly we want to hear from you all out there. If you want to get in on the conversation tonight, press 1. We want to hear from you. We're going to go to our story momentarily, but before I do, I want to, Lady C, if I grew up in a home where the father was abusive and, I mean, an alcoholic, is there a likelihood, and this is all I've experienced growing up as a child, is it a possibility that my behavior as an adult or a young man could be similar to that of my father's because that's the environment I grew up in?
Yes, there's a possibility. That doesn't mean that that child is going to become his father. Sometimes those abusive and those that abuse, the alcoholic, some drugs, that can teach a child, that can put something in that child's mind to where that child say, you know what, I'm never going to be like my parents. I'm never going to be like this. I'm never going to be like that. And they choose a different path. But, yes, it can sway where that person end up being just like their father. I have a sister who I call a sister. She's going through that now where her significant other beat her for years and still is. And now her children grew up watching it. The little girl ended up in a relationship as an adult where she ended up getting with an abusive boyfriend. And one of her sons ended up being an abuser to not only her, but to his significant other. And the second son chose a different path.
Wow. So, Ms. J, let me bring you in here and ask you the question then. Is it true that you could actually be a product of your environment? So if that's the case, then it's not all my fault. Ms. Jane?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I did hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Say it again.
Now, if you're on mute, that means you could hear us, but we couldn't hear you. So,
yeah, I was away from
Ms. Jane. So, if I'm a product of my environment and my behavior in school, in elementary school, middle school, is of such that the teacher's always writing referrals on me, she's always sending me to the office, and I don't understand why. Just because I hit the kids because they make fun of me or I steal stuff, I mean, if I grew up in that environment, I mean, wouldn't it be expected that I'm a product of my environment?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes people will just label you, even though they know where you're from, they know what type of environment you're from. And the kids will pick on you, label you as that type of environment. So you're not necessarily just like your parents will grow up. And it's a struggle because you have to fight your way out of it for people to understand that you're trying to be a separate individual, you know, trying to grow different from them. But it's really hard on a kid to go through that, though, and it really is.
All right. We got a live one here for you all tonight. We're going to go to the story momentarily. But Ms. Cross, this is troubling because it can be confusing. It can really be confusing. A little elementary school kid cannot understand why the teacher is always picking on him just because she says he's bad, he's never going to be anything in life because he's so bad. But his environment growing up, he grew up in, let's say, low-income housing or projects, and all that surrounded him, or her for that matter, was just people that everything they did was bad. That's all they saw. So how do you expect me to be good if that's all I saw? Ms. Cross, are you on mute?
Yes, I was. I'm sorry. I was going to say, yes, it is harder as a child sometimes to not have the learned behaviors, right? Because if you grow up seeing something, especially as a child, you know, they're very impressionable, we typically mirror the behaviors. You know, even when you tell a child to do something, it's not usually what you tell them to do, it's what they see that you do, and those are the behaviors that they have. Even as adults, if we don't intentionally decide to make choices or intentionally decide to make a change, then we do kind of just go off of what we learn, which sometimes is kind of, it seems as if you're going with the flow. You know, I always tell, you know, I tell my clients our brains are very primitive, right? And I say that because we don't really process things consciously. A lot of things that we process is very unconscious. There was a study that showed, I think, like 98% of things that we process is unconscious. And I was like, that sounds a bit high, but it's very true. It's kind of like, you know, listening to a song on the radio and you hate the song and all of a sudden you know all the words. You didn't intentionally want to learn a song, but our brains just kind of pick up on what it knows to be the norm, right, or what's created in our minds to be the norm, unless we kind of interject those thoughts or those behaviors. So with a child, of course, the child's brain is still developing. They don't really know right from wrong unless someone intentionally tells them, hey, this is wrong. And then they still have to process that and start, you know, mimicking those new behaviors that the environment tells doesn't even show them. So it can be a little complex when it comes to kids.
Okay. I want to throw this out there, too, and I want you all to think about this, and it's for our audience as well. There was a law case, may have been a year, maybe 2 years ago, or even longer than that, but it was about a 16-year-old, and I can't remember the state and all the particulars surrounding it, but he came from a very extremely wealthy family. Well, this young man was accused of drunk driving that killed a family of four. And some of you all may recall the incident. And his attorneys looked for their loophole, and they got him off on a term called affluenza, which means that the child was too, grew up so rich that he didn't understand. I mean, I'm laughing because, I mean, I'm not laughing at the situation, but I want to present something else here. He grew up so rich that he didn't understand, according to the defense attorneys, he didn't understand his behavior because he grew up so rich and having everything that he wanted. And it almost sounds like it's entitlement. But he got off on that situation. Benny from the block, let me just bring you in before I go to the story. I mean, that's why can't I say then, Benny from the block, if you may be on mute, but, you know, why can't other people just use that and say, well, that little elementary school kid who grew up in a different environment that is the complete opposite of this affluenza growing up so rich, he grew up so poor, he didn't understand his behavior. So why can't he get off?
Well, first of all, you have an affluent individual who has affluent money who can
by an affluent defense. And so
right.
because that the fence he used, simply have to remember, when we say we're being judged by our peers, sometimes that literally is what it means. I'm sure the people on the jury were people of significance and of wealth, and they can understand that defense, even though it makes no sense to us at all. And when I say us, that means the average everyday working person who has to strive to achieve any level of success. Those people saw that and could relate to that. And so when we talk about environment, that is very, very serious. You want people around you that have similar environmental experiences and understanding. And in this person's case, he was able to present it and was able to get off because he had a group of people that could identify and acknowledge what the defense attorneys were putting out there. And so when we talk about the young man who has the issues at school and being labeled, those are real situations. Remember, the environment that we grow in produces a response similar to that environment. And so in his environment, it's okay to do that. It's okay to steal. It's okay to kind of be disruptive. It's okay to kind of, you know, get in trouble in class. There's probably no organization or there's no sense of, discipline. And he's basically left to his own devices. And that's what he's doing. He's doing what he thinks is normal. So we as parents have to take note of that. And we have to take accountability for our lack of participation so our children don't grow up in situations that they can't just handle on their own.
Okay, so Benjamin Blau, I'm going to stay with you just for a minute. I want to go to the story, but I got to throw this out here. I mean, teachers can certainly, they try to sometimes identify these kids, and they label them. And labeling, we know, can be detrimental. It can be have a negative impact on a child's life. Let's take Kevin Hart, for example, one of the funniest comedians to me in these times. And let's just say I could almost see Kevin Hart maybe have been a classroom clown. I was a classroom clown. And let me tell you something. There's nothing more fun and entertaining than being a classroom clown. And then when I became a teacher, I was still a classroom clown. I mean, it was like I was a teacher, classroom clown, and I could relate to my kids who were classroom clowns. So can you imagine a teacher telling Kevin Hart, you'll never be amount to anything, which they told me, you know, because we're always joking. And the fact of the matter is Kevin Hart assets are worth well over $88 million. Now, you don't call that success, Benny from the Block. Why are labels so dangerous, you know, and
well,
maybe the environment he grew in, up in?
Well, because like anything, labels are something that we use to definitively define a person. For instance, we were just talking about this today. It is very typical that most black folks like to wear expensive clothes but don't have any expensive things, cars, houses, land, property, finances. But they do invest in very, very expensive clothes because they want to be seen and labeled as somebody of significance by the outfits that they wear. And so we look at that as being, oh, okay, well, he must be somebody because he's wearing a $2,000 outfit. Now, we don't know if that outfit was actually purchased, if it was stolen, if it was used by somebody else to get it. We don't know how they came about that. But because they have it on and because we can identify it from the TV, social media, whatever, we automatically label them as, oh, they must be somebody important or he must really have some money because that labeling gives them some sense of illegitimate perception of being more than what they are.
Okay.
All the matter is you're already more than what you are, but don't let things define you. That's not the totality of your life. So, yeah, when you label, like the person that told you you're not going to ever become anything because you're a class clown, you should write them a letter and tell them thank you because everything that you thought about me and every way that you labeled me, you proved me wrong. I mean, I proved you wrong. So sometimes labeling can increase a person's ability to grow and become more. But now, in all due respect, Dr. Justin, I have to say that you did some things, too, that we didn't really discuss. Yes, you may have been a class clown. Yes, you may have still have some funniness in you. But you changed your environment and the people you are around, and they changed who you are. So that's very important, too. Changing who you are and your environment has a greater impact on you than any labeling could ever put on you.
And you know, and that is so important because, in fact, my environment growing up, I grew up in a very poor environment in the projects. And there were all sorts of negative things surrounding me. But what makes the difference, I think, is having a mother who was a very spiritual woman, praying all the time, and she monitored, with 9 children, she monitored everything that we did. There wasn't a father necessarily in the home often, but my mother monitored. We had rules and regulations, and you had to abide by those. Otherwise, you were going to get her wrath, which was not so much the beatdown, but her words. Her words were more powerful than the whooping, if I may use that term, that she would give you. And sometimes when she's talking to me, and I was one of those mischievous ones, I say, Mama, just beat me. I'd rather for you just beat me and get it over with. But your words are like a two-edged sword. It's like you never, it just sticks to you like glue. You know, ladies, let me bring Miss J in. Miss J, can you relate to that when somebody has words that they, your parents or, you know, that just say these words and make you feel like, you know, like, God, can you just like let us stop talking for a moment? Because these words are impacting me.
But, yeah, you know, you like you were saying, you go out there in the world and people tell you that you teach or whatever, that you're no good, you won't amount to something. But when you get to that mother, she's trying to put that engraved in your mind that you can do. And that's why moms and the good people like that keep doing that, you know, try to build your, encourage you up and make you want to do things. So it's good that a person have a mom that would do search like their mom or either somebody else special in their life, because if not, you know, then they'll believe what that one person said, and that's not you.
Right, and she's the one that made the difference for me, and I'm sure many of us on this line can say the same thing. We're going to have an upcoming show on that because it was – and when I said her words were like a two-edged sword, it wasn't that she badgered you. It was she spoke in such a loving way. She spoke in such a loving way that it almost made you just want to just it like appealed to your soul. It was like God was using her voice and the way she said things. You know, it made you feel like you just want to be so holy and so righteous and repent. You know, you didn't have to go to church. You just listen to my mom. We got to get to the story. You're listening live to the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. 347-857-1769. Again, after you hear the story tonight, the topic is, could your environment or your routine cause or contribute to depression? You know, our characters tonight are Adriana and Bart, those two, Adriana and Bart. They are childhood friends who grew up in a very poor and underserved community. They attended schools together from primary throughout high school. Now, after high school graduation, Adriana and Bart pledged to keep in touch solely as platonic friends. They were never romantically involved. Their families were like extended family to each other, to each of them. Bart took up a trade in air conditioning repair, while Adriana worked at a local fast food chain where she met a coworker and became unexpectedly pregnant. How do you become unexpectedly pregnant? Several months into her pregnancy, Adriana the shocking news that she was pregnant. Bart sensed the depression in her young voice, knowing that she did not have this in her plans, and he felt her disappointment that it happened with a guy whom she barely knew. Now, before she had the baby, Adriana started drinking and doing drugs because she had become so depressed and felt that there was no chance of a future to go after any goals of which she never talked about. In fact, shortly after the baby was born, the baby's father deserted her and the baby, he deserted both of them, whom he claimed was not his, and moved to another state. Adriana was still living at home with her mother, who could not provide any financial assistance or any other assistance like keeping the baby because she too was on public assistance. The relationship between Adriana and her mother was very rocky and strained, which also made it difficult for her to function because she felt the lack of having a support system. Now, by now, Adriana's best friend, Bart, had moved to another state, having tremendous success with his certification in air conditioning repair. He felt bad for Adriana, but knew that he did not want any parts of the environment he grew up in. His rationale for this is he felt the environment and daily routine of not desiring anything outside of that could lead to depression, which may have been what caused or contributed to Adriana's depression. As our story fast forwards, 2 years later, Adriana has gone further into depression with another baby and a state of men, drugs, and alcohol. She's only 20 years old. She has no clue of how to overcome her state of depression in anticipation of getting out of this rut. You know, and so with our story, I mean, because this is not picking on any gender, because we have stories about men that, you know, mess up, women that mess up, because, you know, we're not talking about the animal world here, except with humans. So, you know, I don't want anyone who's listening to say, well, his story is picking on women. This could be a man. It could go either way, either way. So I want to begin with Ms. Frost and say, did Adriana by any chance cause this on herself, Ms. Frost? I mean, you know, she's only 20 now.
Well, you know, the whole thing is I wouldn't say that she caused it on herself. You know, we all make decisions, especially at that age where, you know, maybe if we were looking back, we probably wouldn't have made them, right? But she made the decision to have sex, and she got pregnant. You know, that took two people for that to happen. It seems like that wasn't something, of course, that she planned, but I wouldn't say she caused it on herself. I think maybe, you know, it sounds like maybe the environment she was in and, I don't know if I want to say that, but because everybody handles different situations differently. And her having a child with someone that eventually left her, that can be very traumatizing, right? Everybody's level of trauma is different. But for her, that may have been a very traumatic event. And what happens is when you don't know how to properly express and place feelings, you look for something to compensate those feelings. So her compensation was the drugs and the alcohol. Does it make it right? Of course not, you know. But that's the thing is she needs help. She needs guidance. She needs someone to come in and tell her, you know what, you still are valuable. You made a decision that, you know, okay, you should not have made, but at the end of the day, you're still worthy of love. You're still worthy of acceptance. You're still, you know, you're still a valuable person. And it sounds like her sense of worth has diminished. And a lot of times when you can't really see your way out and you have a low sense of self, you do tend to do things that, you know, the average person would definitely may not have done. Sounds like she's in a rut and she's not really seeing her way out.
Well, absolutely. Ladies, let me bring you in because the question becomes, I mean, how do you have an unexpected pregnancy? And then later on, as the story fast forward, you go from one baby to now another one, and you're already having a difficult time. Could the environment have played a role on that? And if so, Bart got up out of that environment, and Benny from the Block said earlier, sometimes you got to move out of the environment.
I feel like it's choices to be made. You know, I believe she did make this. I mean, I can't say the baby was unplanned. I'm going to say that. The baby was unplanned. But she could have used protection behind it. But when you look at the whole matter, God was the one that put that baby inside her stomach. You know? So since God put the baby inside, exactly. So when God put the baby inside her stomach, she just needs to pray and know that God is going to take care of that baby. No matter what stage she is in life, that baby is going to be provided for.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Miss Lady C, that's deep. God put the baby inside her stomach. Benny from Block, I got to bring you in. Miss J, stand by. Because Benny from the Block, I'm thinking now something Miss Lady C has said here. And Lazy, we're not picking on you, but I'm just trying to get some clarity here. I'm just saying. Benny from the Block, we want your opinion on this here. God put that baby in her stomach, and then she went from one unexpected pregnancy or unplanned pregnancy and then had another one. And it reminds me of when I'm in the international community, when I go to Mexico every year, I support an orphanage over there, and I see all of these babies, and there's one young lady and this young man, they have like three babies, and neither one of them can really even take care of these kids. and they obviously are having unprotected intercourse. And I'm saying, okay, this situation is, I can see that one baby, but now you all are living in a hut. That's what they were living in. And now they got two more babies, and she's pregnant again with the fourth one. So I'm wondering, and they're coming to get food that we're providing. So Benny from the block, how do you explain this, that God put the baby in there, and in your opinion, and that you're not causing some of this on yourself?
Well, remember, the Lord tells us that what was looked at to be used for bad can actually be used for good. We don't know what that baby may grow up to be. We don't know what that baby may grow up to accomplish. We don't know what that baby may be later on in life that could just change the entire world. We only see the situation, and so we got to quit looking at just situations. We got to look beyond the situation, because when we look at our own lives, we kind of think about, you know, you, me, all of us, we can think about, hey, we grew up in a situation that should have been this way, but then it turned out to be this way.
Right.
Guess what? We didn't know then that we were going to be where we are now. We might have thought about it or maybe even have a dream about it, but we had no idea that one day that we would be in the positions we're going to be in. Not saying that we're greater or better than anybody else, but what I'm saying
right.
is every life is precious. Every life is precious, no matter how it came here, how it was born. We had a black U.S. president who grew up with a single white mom, and his dad wasn't even there in the picture, but it still happened. So we never know what the outcome is going to be later on in our lives. We got to hold on to everybody precious and dear. Yes, sometimes babies come here in ways that are not quite expected. I mean, let's just be honest. We can look back through biblical times. Moses had his mama had to put him in a basket and put him in a river and send him down the river to save his life. Now,
right.
we didn't know he was going to become the greatest man to deliver his entire heritage and family from the captors of heaven. Not to mention, he grew up with the captors. So there's so much to this in life, and I just want us to always remember, no matter how good, no matter how bad the situation may be, there is always goodness in the situation, because if God blessed it to be, then it's supposed to be. If he wouldn't have blessed it, it wouldn't have been.
That's an important point. I mean, when you look at, when I'm seeing, like over there, when I'm in that international world, and I see little kids roaming the street that are 3 years of age, and they're competing with dogs to try to find food. That is so heart-wrenching that, you know, you begin to wonder. And yes, I mean, I'm very passionate about that, and that's why I go to provide that assistance. But let's go back to the topic tonight. I mean, your environment. Michelle, let me bring
let
you
me,
in
me,
here
let,
and
let,
as we discuss
let me
this
say
environment.
This, let me say this real quick. Let me take this. You got to remember, the word says God takes care of babies and fools.
And fools.
He takes care
right.
of babies and fools.
Right. So that's, you know, we're going to have a topic on that one there, because I think, I mean, I believe that parents do have to take some responsibility. Once the child is here, of course, you know, God takes care of all of us. But when you see this, you know, so, I mean, if we're on that particular area, then we look at other countries. When you see these commercials where there's starvation, and so, Benny, people will ask the question. I mean, I don't want to change too much of the subject tonight, but when people see these kids starving and flies are all around them and their muscles are, the body begins to eat from itself, parasites and misers. The body is eating from itself because it's not getting nutrition. So then how, I mean, take like Africa, for example, you know, one of the countries, I see major commercials that come out. So how is that, I'm just trying to figure out, what good is that when a mother's sitting there with four babies and her babies are dying of malnutrition? Benny from the block, let's bring you in on that one, and then we'll move on.
Well, we have to remember something. Some things, when I say everything works out for the good, sometimes what we're looking at is not what we are receiving. Sometimes things that we see, such as the situation just brought up about the babies in Africa, it tugs on people's heart. And so God is saying, hey, you see there's something wrong. What are you going to do? See, some things are designed to tug on our hearts and to find out where our character is about how we feel about humanity and people. Are we doing all that we can to help those who have less? Are we doing all that we can to help those here in this country that have less? Are we doing all we can to help anybody that has less? And sometimes that's a tug on people's heart to say, hey, look, you see this, but what? Harden not your heart. See, a lot of us are hardening our hearts to what we see. Ah, well, that's just cheating. Ah, well, we don't need that many people more anyway. But then guess what? COVID came and took out a whole bunch of people, and a whole bunch of people said, wait a minute, you know, it used to be Black Lives Matter, all lives. Hey, just my life matters. Now, at this point, I got to do everything in my power to try to help myself stay alive in this situation. And so some things happen to bring awareness to where we're lacking in and then asking our character. What is our character saying about the things that we see and do? Is our character on a response, or is our character on a stop and hold, or is our character saying, well, that's not my problem? So some things are just that way. We have to have certain situations that happen to get the character of the majority of us lined up to be where it's supposed to be. And that's its only, you know, purpose.
All right, we're going to ask you to stand by. Ladies, let me bring in Ms. Jade, who's going to be the same question for both of you all. And let me begin with asking the question, what do you think made the difference between Adriana and her best friend Bart's success? Let's start with you, Lady C. What do you think made the difference?
The choices he made. He chose not to become a product of his environment. And she chose to just become it.
Okay, Ms. Jay, what do you think? Anything different from what Lady C has said?
Well, basically the same, but as far as Bart, they came from the same environment, but evidently everybody's mind works differently. He must have a goal set mind. And Adriana, she didn't have goals. And maybe he had that mom or someone to really encourage him. And it sounds like as far as Ariana, she didn't have that because her mother was in the same condition, you know, lived the same way she's living now. Paycheck by paycheck, scuffing, and, you know, it's sad to say, but, you know, a lot of people, when they don't have that guidance and they be in such environment, they actually become a product of it, and that's what it seems like happened with her. And she just figured that this is the way to live. She didn't want to think of any other way. So I think that's what happened with her.
Okay, so, Ms. Jay, let me stay with you for a moment. What advice, if any, would you tell Adriana, you know, in terms of getting herself together? I mean, she's got now a second baby, and so she's only 20. She's now doing drugs and she's doing alcohol. What, if anything, could you tell her that she might listen to?
You know, one thing, you know, if you want to, you can get out of that. You know, there's help. You know, just don't rely on your environment to pull you out. Go out and seek help from somewhere. And, of course, I will help to direct her to help. I wouldn't just leave her there by herself. But I would suggest to her to get help because she's gotten all into the drugs and the alcohol. It's going to be hard for her to do it by herself. And she's just going to need to seek help and to talk with someone who can inspire her. You know,
So Ms. Jay, you talk about, you say that if she wants to, she can get off. Have you ever experienced anyone with an addiction, particularly alcoholic addiction or drug addiction? Have you ever experienced anyone with that was close to you?
Yeah. Older people, yeah.
Right. And was that, when you talk about alcohol and drug addiction, that is very, very, my experience is people who deal in that, it's a very difficult thing to overcome, and it sounds easier said than done for those of us who may not engage like that. But people who are in that environment, then I would want to believe that this thing is, that's why it's called an addiction. It's like, can I really help myself? Can you really help yourself, Ms. Jay, you think?
No, you can't. You have to receive help, because you are, most people were, the one I know was in denial. Knowing that they drink, knowing they stay drunk. I'm not drunk, this is just me, this is just the way I am. But they are in denial. Or I just drink a little bit. I don't drink much. But they are they still work and do an excellent job, but they're drunk on the job.
Functional. They're
but
functional.
They can still
functional.
You know, I'm trying to be functional.
Yeah, functional.
Yeah.
Right.
And but they still need help. And they can't do it by themselves because they are in denial. So just you have to seek help, and
well,
you have to want
to
get the help.
Yeah, but it's a very serious, serious problem, and I don't think most of us understand it unless you've had some experience with it or dealt with somebody who's having an addictive behavior. I mean, it's serious, and we have certainly other addictive behaviors that may not come across the society as a social ill, but I mean, addictions are real, just like phobias are real. So there's a lot of situations that are going on out here that we really don't understand, and we think that, okay, this person's on drugs, why can't they just stop? you just can't stop that. You know, a lot of cases, I mean, some people have found, and basically they teach us and train us in psychology that unless somebody has had a traumatic or dramatic experience, there's a likelihood that might bring about some degree of change. But then, you know, sometimes it's encouraging for you, or you are encouraged. You got to get out of that environment. And see, some of these same things with addictive behaviors, it could be you're addicted to the environment. Finish from the block, let's bring you in. Do you think a person could be addicted to that environment, like Adriana could be addicted, her mother's there. She's not getting any assistance. Her mother's on public assistance. So could Adriana be, you know, children live what they learn. They grow up with that. So could that be an addiction for her, the environment?
Absolutely. And remember, parents are the first. Hold on, I'm going to say this again. When children are born, they just start recording. They're watching everything, the mother, father, whoever, whatever it is, they're watching, they're recording, 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 recording. At some point in their lives, they get to a place where they stop recording and they start playing back what they've been recording. And so that's what she's been recording, the figuring out how to get by and barely get by and struggling, and all that is just what you've read in your child. You pretty much imprinted that on their brain, on their thought process. Now, does that have to be? No. You could somehow, listen, being poor is an addiction, because you decide to stay in a poor state of mind, a poor state of being, a poor state of situation. It's not the physicality of your poverty level. It's the way you think. A poor mind produces poor results. And so we got to get to a better place in our lives where we're not thinking like poor people, making poor thoughts, poor decisions, poor strides. We got to make sure we impart into our children the best that we can. My parents didn't have a very good education, but they taught us, our children, to want better, to be better, to do better. And they said, we got to strive to get you better by making sure when you go to school, learn as much as you can. We didn't get the opportunity to do. They made us come out of school and go work in the field. But we want our children to at least have an opportunity to go and learn. And so for me, that's been a journey all my life. I am forever learning. I can't stop learning. I keep wanting to learn and be better and learn better to help people to grow, because that's what my parents were recording. I was recording from them. They didn't actually have that, but they were teaching that. And so we could teach better ways of living, even if we don't physically have it or financially have it or any other situation we can think of, we could still teach our children to be better, even if it didn't happen for us.
All right. We want to hear from you all out there as well. Press 1 on your dial. Ms. Cross is having technical difficulties. Okay, she's back in with us now. I mean, this is some – Ms. Cross, I want to get your opinion, and thank you. We saw that you had, you were having technical difficulties. Ms. Cross, I want to get your opinion on addictions. I know you're in the mental health field, and for our audience, sometimes people don't fully understand addictive behaviors. I mean, if you're on cocaine and you're on, you know, these drugs that alter the brain, that you feel,
yeah.
I mean, even nicotine they talk about, people don't understand when you're desiring to have that, you're going to go, you got to get that stuff because that
yeah.
endocrine part of your brain is working like, I got to get this stuff by any means necessary. So talk to that issue for a moment, then we'll go to the phone lines and we'll start taking some of the comments tonight.
Yeah, it is. It's addiction, especially drug addictions, it's a very debilitating illness, right? And I think for a long time we didn't recognize it was an illness. And I think even, you know, I had times when I worked as a substance abuse counselor, I'm kind of delving into it now. It's very, very hard. And even, I'm going to be honest, frustrating to see people trying to overcome this addiction and every now and again falling back and becoming victim to their addiction, right? In the world of substance abuse, right, the one of the sayings is relapse is a part of recovery because it's usually very rare that you see someone that's addicted to drugs and they just quit cold turkey. Not to say that it can't happen, but it's a rarity. Usually they go through, I think the thing is like 7 times of sobriety before you actually quit, you know? And it's so sad because I have clients who I see them trying, I see them struggling. But when you kind of know that when that kind of becomes your coping skill, your learned behavior, it's hard sometimes to unlearn. It's not impossible, but it definitely is a struggle. And I think that if we've never experienced it, it is even more frustrating, even harder for someone who hasn't really seen it or someone who hasn't really studied it or, you know, to really fully accept, right? Because I'm telling you, it's even hard for me when I'm working with my clients. They get frustrated when they relapse. I know that's not good, but like I used to get a bit frustrated. That's why I kind of had to take myself away from that world because you have to have an understanding that it is going to be they are going to relapse. They are going to struggle. There is going to be manipulative behaviors. There's going to be times where they're going to lie to you and they're going to, because they're struggling, you know, not giving in and out, but at the same time, it has to be some understanding on that end as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my experience with drug addictions, and I've worked in those facilities for a number of years, and let me tell you something. They're going to, by any means necessary, and they will be able to look you in the face and say, I didn't take that $30 out of your purse. I didn't steal that out of your wallet. I mean, they will, I mean, and it's like, there is almost like something comes in, and of course it's altering the mechanisms of the brain, how it works, and they will come in and they will, let me tell you something, it can destroy communities. When you have that drug that infiltrate communities, it can destroy them. So, I mean, with Adriana's situation, you know, that environment that she grew up in, it can be addicting. You know, and Bart, with him, the difference as I see it, you gotta want better. You gotta want better before you start taking on these additives like drugs or alcohol. You got to want better. And you all said it earlier, just because maybe the parents are a certain way, you don't have to be that way. My father was an alcoholic, and I said, I vowed I would never touch a drink. And to this day, I've never touched a drink of alcohol. I saw what it did to him, and I said, no. Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to go to phone lines. Thank you for your patience. Let's go to 305-769. Welcome to the broadcast tonight. Who do we have? 305-769. All right.
Hello. How's everyone doing? This is Ms. Augustine.
Ms. Augustine, thank you for joining us. Ms. Augustine, what do you make out of this? Briefly, we're running out of time. What do you make out of this tonight's topic?
I was raised in a drug neighborhood. My whole family was using drugs, my brothers, my sisters, and I chose a different way. I didn't go the way they did. And then what I did is I helped them. I enabled them by helping them, and it didn't help them. I have a brother who's 68 years old still using drugs. I have a brother who's 70 years old still using drugs. I have a brother who died and never stopped, and I help them, but now I don't help anymore. You know, I helped them by giving them a place to live, giving them food to eat. They stole from me, you know, they lied to me, you know, but, and I have a son. My son, I moved from the area where I live to a nice neighborhood, and my youngest son, his father was an addict, so he went to that neighborhood to be with that side of the family, and my other son didn't. My oldest son, he doesn't drink, doesn't do drugs, nothing, but my other son did everything his father and the father family did, and that side of the family is the side of the family he stayed close to.
Wow, so you would say one of the sons is a product of perhaps that environment?
No, because I left that environment when I was 17. And
okay.
So his father took him over there, but his father died when he was 36. So he wasn't raised in that area, but he would go back to that neighborhood because he liked those kind of people. And my other son didn't.
Okay, so this shows that a person's got to want certain things to be better for them. Would you agree with that, Ms. Augustine?
Yes, you have to choose because I was raised in a neighborhood. I got out. I got
right.
out and never looked back, you know. And then to
right.
see my children and then my sisters and brothers go back to that area, I didn't understand it. I still
okay.
don't understand. I don't understand how a man could be 70 years old and still using drugs. I don't get it.
Yeah, addiction. Ms. Augustine, we're going to ask you to stand by. We appreciate your thought. And we're going to ask you to stand by. We're going to try to get back to you. We're going to hear from the rest of you all out there as well. Lady C, I want to give you this comment. This comes into the studio. Could the environmental routine cause or contribute to depression? This male writes in. He says, yes. I believe that you can be a product of your environment. I strongly believe that. I think that that plays a significant role in who you are. Lady C, I mean, I kind of see it a little differently. You don't have to be that product of your environment. It plays a strong, I mean, you can take some things from that, can't you? Can't you take some good things from that and say, I'm resilient, I want better? Lady C, I mean, come on, do a product of the environment. Does that have to be bad?
No, it does not have to be bad. I do agree with the last caller. You know, hearing her, I can't say I necessarily agree, but hearing her story brought me to generational curses, you know, because I feel like no matter how much you bring a person out of an environment or how much you, like for an example, she said that she left the home when she was 16 or something like that, and, you know, he wasn't a part of that environment, but yet he still went to that his mindset kept going to that environment. I feel like it's
right.
a generational curse. I think something happens based on generational curses.
Wow. So if that's the case, you know, there's always trigger words here that we have in the studio. When something is said, it triggers an upcoming show topic, and, you know, producers let me see that. So, ladies, I want to stay with you just for a second because we're going to come to Miss J next. And as if that's the case, if you're talking about generational curses, then, and Benny from Block, we're going to bring you in your thoughts on this as well. Then the question becomes, is sin an addiction, or could sin be an addiction? And we have a show upcoming on that one as well. Could that be? So if that's the case, it's not any of our fault of whatever we do, because we didn't create that. Lady C?
I think sin can be an addiction. It could be both. It can be an addiction on certain things because there's, you know, sexual mortality out there where people are addicted to porn, you know, very addicted, you know. I think that some of that is an addiction, but that's a sin. I think certain sins are choices, you know. So it's a little bit of both in my opinion.
All right, Ms. J, we're going to bring you in, and then Benny from the Block. I mean, if we're talking now about, you know, the environment, we're talking about environmental stuff now, how you grow up. And we have these theories like Piaget and a lot of them Ms. Cross, I'm going to bring you in a moment because you know about the theorists and all of these as well as many of us here do. And they're talking about that behaviors are shaped between the ages of 0 and 7. And so if you're a certain way, your character, your personality trait, if that's the way you are and then you still maintain yourselves in a certain environment, then there's a likelihood that that's who you are, that label becomes attached. Ms. J, I want to bring you in here and say, hey, if you're a product of your environment, I mean, this young man was attracted to that environment back over there, even though his mother had left the environment, he liked dealing with that environment. So then the question becomes, if it's a generational curse, as Lady C points out, then is sin an addiction?
I agree with yes and no on that. He was attracted to toxic people, I call it. And to me, sin, I don't think it's addiction. It's a lifestyle. It's your choice. People go out here and commit robberies and all that. That's because they choose to do wrong. I don't think that they're addicted to it because they might get enough of what they want and then they'll stop. So I think that's more easily stopped because addictions are not stopped easily. Because they could rob a bank and get millions of dollars, and they say, okay, I'm fine now. You know, I'm going to stop for a while. I'm going to stop. You know.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think that. I think it's a choice or a lifestyle for a while to do.
Well, you know, Ms. J, if you might think that they think that it's fine now, I've robbed banks and they've taken on millions of dollars, but there's that urge in them to go do it again. And you've even heard they've interviewed serial killers, and they say that they've got that urge to go and kill somebody again. So, I mean, these are addictions, and then how does it lead to sin being an addiction? And we have a show coming up on that one. I remember growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in, to channel some of our negative behaviors and character, they put us in boxing and martial arts. And let me tell you, it's like I loved boxing. You know, it was an outlet for me. And a lot of the boys in the neighborhood, we got into boxing and martial arts. And then as I got older, I remembered those things that I enjoyed about those sports. And I even put mirrors in my home as a grown man, too old to go back into the ring. But it's like, you know, I begin to understand even why Muhammad Ali didn't give up. He wanted to fight when he didn't have the skills that he had in his younger years. So it's like, I'm telling you, that brain, the way it works, that the adrenaline that we have, that rush, that urge, you know, I can do it again. And sometimes I'm still around here shadow boxing. And it's like people don't understand. So, Benny from the block, I want to bring you in. It's like I remember a woman, a medical doctor telling me once that her husband was trying to become a medical doctor as well, and they had a problem where he had a sexual addiction, and she identified it as a sexual addiction. He couldn't help. She says she came to the conclusion, she tried to get him help, but she came to the realization that he could not help it. His father was like that. So now, Benny from the block, the question becomes, when we talk about environment, he grew up where his father was promiscuous. And so it's like he had it. So could sin be an addiction, according to Lady C, where it's a generational curse? And I know what the Bible says, that the sins of the fathers shall be visited unto the generation and generation and so forth. Where are we going with that?
So to answer your question, yes. Yes, it can be addiction. And, you know, we always identify the biggie sins. We call them biggie sins, you know, porno, you know, sexual insecurity, you know, all those things. Sin is forever present around us. It's present in our daily walk, in our thoughts. It just comes to us. And if we were all honest and true about it, which we don't have to be on this radio, but I'm saying if we thought about it, we'd probably get at least 1,000 bombardments of different sins every day, all the time.
Right.
All the time. But we just don't we don't acknowledge it to be a sin. But we consistently probably think about some of the same things over and over and over again. It can be something as simple as I'm just going to take $1 every day, they won't miss a dollar. You know, I need help. And we justify.
Right.
We justify. or I'm just gonna steal these supplies here because I can't afford to pay for them. See, we justify our stealing. I don't care how you look at it; it's still stealing. Or you know, ooh, that man is so far. Ooh. We don't speak it out, but I know he could do. Hey, it's still the same thing. We all get bothered every day, whether we see it, we hear it, we encounter it in our mind. We are sinful people. It is in our nature to be sinful. We don't mean to do it all the time. It just comes upon us. We got so much happening in our world now. We are bombarded with everything. And it's hard to say, I don't never sin. Liar, liar, pants on fire. If you think it, you've already committed this sin. So I don't like people that try to tell me that. I'm just a real, hey, listen, I'm a real person. I tell it like it is. I'm not here for points, but I'm just being honest with us. So, yes, you can't create generational curses by your actions and your deeds of what you've done. So that's just the way life goes. There's some people who have parents who have purposely destroyed their children's lives by not making them responsible to the people that have to grow up and raise them. Oh, you know, no, you trust me, you get it, and the man, I'm good. And they're users. There are people who have become professional users of people, and then they discredit them. You don't ever do that. It's sad that we live like that. We're supposed to love, honor, and respect each other. So how can you have somebody living in the house with you, taking care of you, but yet your children can disrespect him, you disrespect him, and then you talk about him to your friends and families and everybody else, and then later on you wonder, why is he doing so much better after he dropped you than you are? Because you created the curse. You created the problem. If you go around and sleep with 20,000 people, expect your children to be the same way as you, because you put that DNA in them to do that, those kind of things and those kind of horrific things. And they go on to embarrass you, because when your name pop up, son of JJW, just committed 25 rapes. Guess who they look at? The father. That's who they look at, the father. So your name could be cursed by your generational children, offspring, because of what you didn't do. You should have stood up for what was right. Hey, son, you know what? Yeah, I was a hoe. I admit it. Yep, I did all those things. But I want you to not be one because it didn't really work for me. So I'm telling you that now. Or, son, I was an alcoholic, and I don't want you to be an alcoholic, and I'm telling you now because it didn't work for me. Or I'm a drug addict or drug addiction, or I got all these kind of issues, but I'm telling you not to do this so that you can have a better life than I have. We're supposed to pass on a better life than what we have for our own selves, and we have to be accountable and responsible for that. You've got to be honest about your situation. I don't care if you're a drug addict. Don't let your children continue to do that. Cut that curse off from you. Let you be the end of that curse. You can do that. You can stop it right
there. That's a very good point. We're going to actually stand by a minute from the block. I want to bring in Ms. Cross. Ms. Cross, I want
to
bring
you
in. I might
need you to speak on my radio. Would you speak?
Hello?
Okay, talk about generation.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, Ms. I'm going to bring you in a second, Ms. Augustine. Ms. Cross, I want to bring you in with this comment. I'm sure that society would say that people are products of their environment, but I personally don't think or believe that we have to display bad character if we grew up in a negative environment. Ms. Cross, how true is that? I mean, certainly I agree with that. And then we're going to go to Ms. Augustine to speak on generational curse that she mentioned.
Yeah, I agree. We don't have to. You know, not everyone who grows up in a certain environment become a product of the negative part of that environment, you know, because even those environments that grow up with negativity, there's still some positivity too sometimes. So maybe they decided to lean left instead of leaning right. So I think that comment is very true. You know, I did want to say, because I know I'm just kind of touching on what you said about pretty much having behaviors replaced, right? So sometimes when you know, growing up in environments that can be a bit rough, they do tend to put boxing, they do tend to put karate in there, because you have to rechannel that energy, right? You have to rechannel that energy. All about healing, all about therapy. You know, therapy is all about replacing behaviors, right? So replacing thoughts, intercepting those thoughts. Because the thing is, you're right, if you grow up learning something and you know it to be law, and then someone comes in and says, hey, that's not exactly how it should be done, it might make you pause, but you're either going to decide to say, you know what, I'm going to listen to what might be logical, or I'm going to listen to what I know. But it has to be a choice, right? But it's all about becoming intentional and making the attempt to change. But that you have to recognize that there's a need for change. And that's where I think, to be honest with you, that's somewhat of a struggle, because if you grew up, for some people, right, not for everyone, but if you grew up in an environment where everything, your grandmother did it, grandfather did it, everybody did it, and it's just what you knew it to be, and you never saw any different, you might not even recognize that there's a need for change. So that's why it's like, it's good to, you know, incorporate difference in things that become so normal, right? Because we'll take things that's normal that's so abnormal, because that's all we know, you know. So I think, like you were, that's what, you know, it's all about introducing something new, something fresh, something that is more healthy to replace those negative behaviors.
Awesome, awesome. We're going to actually stand by you all. Ms. Augustine, we're going to bring you in. We're running out of time. Just give us your quick thought on what you wanted to comment on generational curse.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me? Okay. What I wanted to do was, my son is here, my oldest son. I was going to let him speak to you while he chose not to go in the direction of his brother. His brother's father fed him drugs when he was a little baby. He fed him alcohol. He took him when he was with women, let him watch him have sex. I'm talking about a baby from 2 years old to 5 years old. He said, my son told me, he said, I'm supposed to be like my father. My father did all of this, so I'm supposed to follow my father's footsteps. His father was killed when he was 36. My son thought he would not live to be 36. He'd lived to be 37, had an accident, almost died, but God wasn't ready for him. He's still living, but he's still doing the same thing. He got brain damage from the accident, but he still does the drugs.
Wow. Wow. So you think that that's generational curse?
I think it's a generation curse, because it's not just my son, my brothers. All of my brothers, I have five brothers, all of them are addicts. All of them are addicts. And I don't know where I'm from, not from my mother and not from my father. I don't know where it came from. But for my son's father,
wow.
Yes, his whole family was alcoholic and addicts.
Wow,
so
that's
can I ask
interesting.
You a question?
We had a show.
Were you attracted to that type of behavior, because you married somebody that had that type of behavior?
I married husband not knowing. He was handsome, tall. He told me at 14 that I was going to be his wife, and I thought he was a man that God sent to me. And I married him at 18, and I thought, I didn't know that that's who he was. He got like that as we was married. It got worse and worse and worse and worse, until I had to escape with my life and the life of my children.
Wow, that is interesting. That is interesting. You missed the show, I think, a week or two ago when we talked about, you know, when you think God has sent you someone in the life. I mean, that's irrelevant in this stage of your life. But I'm so sorry that happened to you. But that's why these shows are so important. We get various opinions on here, whether we agree or disagree, or we certainly respect each other's opinions, because it's thought-provoking. It gives people something to think about. And you can also listen to this show in its entirety 20 minutes after the broadcast ends, simply by going to drjessewalker.com or drjessewalkerinc.com. You can also subscribe and, you know, pay $30 every 3 months, and you'll get the professional opinion that I send in my Food for Thought. I want to go now to Ms. J. Let me bring you in, Ms. J. I want to ask you this question, the same one from Ms. Cross. And the question, this comment comes in, it's a rather intriguing comment. This male, he says, could your environment or routine cause, you know, depression? Well, could it be the jury is still out on this question? The reason I say that is because I've been teaching for over 20 years in certain communities, and I notice a continuation in the patterns of select students who grew up in poor environments of neighborhoods. I mean, it is what it is. So let me bring you in here. What are they really saying? That they see patterns from kids in poor neighborhoods. What do you think there? How do you interpret that?
Basically, they're saying birds of a feather flock together. They're saying these kids, the people, come from this area, and they all going to be the same. I don't see them being any different, which is bad to say, because every individual is different. You know, like we talked earlier, it might be one or two or several of the kids that refuse to be a part of that environment, but they're going to label them that way anyway. So, you know, which is not good, but that's basically what they're saying, all the same, same birds in the feathers.
Absolutely, and I want to bring Miss Cross, before you come in, I want to bring Lady C in, and ask, so, I mean, if teachers are stereotyping like this and saying, okay, I work in this community, I don't live in this community, but, you know, that's what I'm dealing with, so it is what it is, you know, so I'm just going to, you know, it's a job for me now. What do you see in terms of being detrimentally dangerous with somebody having that type of attitude, Lady C?
Hey, I missed the question, so I don't know what it was because I was in the middle of doing something.
Okay, let me go to Ms. Cross. Ms. Cross, let me bring you in here and ask that question. I mean, how detrimentally dangerous is that if a teacher has that attitude that, hey, you know what, this is a community that I've been assigned to. I work over here. You know, because I'm not going to put my passion and my heart all into it. I'm just going to collect a paycheck.
They're going to definitely overlook a lot of students and their potential. And I think that, unfortunately, that's what happens in inner city schools. You know, I remember I went to a school that was predominantly Black, and the whole focus was making sure you graduate and passing the HSC. What was it called? I forgot what the test was called.
LCAT, was it LCAT or ACT?
No, I was a little older. HSC,
okay.
I forgot what it was. But the whole thing,
right.
That was a push. College wasn't really discussed. The only time college
right.
was discussed was if you were in an advanced placement class. So I had, you know, I was fortunate to have advanced placement classes, so that's when we discussed college. But they didn't discuss college on an overall. It was all about graduating from high school and passing this test. The discussions weren't even about what was going to happen after high school. It just didn't happen if you weren't in certain classes. And I remember even thinking that, you know, wow, dual enrollment. Like, I pretty much was done with high school in 11th grade. But instead of them educating me and saying, hey, you could start college, it was like, okay, just take, just be an aide for CSI. I was an aide for CSI for like 2-3 years straight. I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. I was like, hey, I got a free period. It's my planning period. That's how I struck it up. In my head, that's how I picked it up. But I'm like, what a waste. What a waste. I could have used those credits and furthered my education to where now I wouldn't have to have maybe had those loans that I had to pay for school. You know, it frustrates me. So I feel like that statement that he made, I can understand as an educator being frustrated, but that's when you have to, you know, sometimes, and I'm not judging because I know you get burnt out, right? Because you go in there, headstrong, I want to be this amazing teacher, you're vibrant. You know, I've done therapy with teachers, right? And they just feel like, you know, so much politics behind them kind of really going in the way they want to go in, and then the kids go ahead and start being disrespectful, and the parents don't want to help. So it's so much behind it. But with his sentiments and what he said, he's already shut down in terms of his ability to see that child that's a cry for help, or his ability to see that child that just needs a little bit more of a push and to come out of their circumstance and become that doctor, become that lawyer, become that engineer. Like, my graduating class, even though we were in a city, I have engineers, I got doctors, I got lawyers, like, physician assistants. It's so amazing to see that we came from an environment, wasn't poor, but we came from immigrant parents, and we were able to make a difference. You know, just because someone kind of planted a little bit of a seed, somebody told somebody who told somebody. That's how it looked in my class, you know? So I think you got to be very careful, though. Educators have to be very careful. And if they feel like it's starting to just become too much, you might need to switch positions. Switch careers, I don't know. But, like, they will miss the market. That's just it.
Right. Ms. Cross, let me give you this one as well. We're running out of time here, and we're going to ask you to close us out tonight. But let me give you this one here. This male, he says, sure, the environment could contribute. The environment could contribute, but I have also seen children who grew up in other environments that have committed gruesome crimes as well.
Yes.
So how do you explain that? That's the question.
Yeah, that lends very much to what you brought up earlier about the affluency, whatever that term is they made up to justify vehicular manslaughter, right? So whole thing is you're right. You know, those environments, because those kids, there's something lacking, right? When people start, and it's even with the 15-year-old who drank and drove, it might not even have been that he was such a troubled child. So he made a dumb decision. Because I know that at that age, your brain is not fully developed, and somebody gave him a drink, and he thought he could drive. He thought he was Superman that day. I don't know. I'm not justifying that. But when you see these kids come from these affluent neighborhoods and they do these type of crimes, something's lacking. Sometimes the parents overcompensate by giving them materialistic things instead of giving them love or instead of giving them time, right? I'm not going to say love because maybe everybody's love languages are different. But instead of giving them time, instead of giving them the attention, they gave them things. And these kids are like, oh, I just want time with my parents. You know, we watch these after-school specials and we get a little glimpse into how they live and how they think, you know, because art depicts life. But it's something missing. And the thing is, it makes sense. In both environments, two different kids, right? But they're going through the same struggles of trying to find identity. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a part of the developmental stages, right? But something is missing.
Well, is it, Ms. Cross, because now you hit another one of those triggers in here, which brings an upcoming show that we're going to be having, because the question becomes, is there an age of reasoning? And I can assure you, even though we're talking about affluenza, where we talk about the young man who got drunk, intoxicated, and apparently his mother had been enabling him, and now he's too rich, grown up too rich to know the difference between good and bad. And so, but I can assure you, you talk about a 16-year-old. Is there an age of reasoning? And so the question becomes, Ms. Cross, at 16, mm-hmm. Ms. Cross, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay, I thought I heard background noise. But so the question becomes, Ms. Cross, I can assure you that you didn't take a drink and become drunk at 16. I didn't take a drink and become drunk at 16 and cause a heinous crime like that.
It may have been what you're exposed to. And here's the thing. And if we're going to look at there's actually a law out right now to where they are revisiting the people who are incarcerated who have committed crimes before the ages of, I think it's 21 or something, and them actually revisiting their cases, because studies have shown psychologically that the brain is not fully mature. Like, they are actually and revisit. This law is out there. You guys can research it to where they say the level of maturity, the full level of maturity is not reached until 26.
If we're looking for justification on things, Ms. Cross, they basically look at a child under the age of 7 and depends on the crime that child commit. And again, this is not legal advice. But the age of 7, you know, there's a likelihood that child is not going to be, you know, punished, and it depends on the crime that's committed. But, I mean, and we're going to have an upcoming show on that. Is there an age of reasoning? And so a 16-year-old, I just cannot see a 16-year-old not knowing that if he gets drunk or she gets drunk, that there's a good likelihood, a substantial, unjustifiable risk that you can cause serious bodily harm or even death. I just can't understand that. We're going to ask them. Go ahead.
I don't agree. I don't think that's the first thought in their mind. Like, because at that age, if we look at the stages of development, Eric Erickson has the stages of development, which is called identity versus role confusion, right? And if you look at that, those kids, during that time, you're pretty much trying to struggle to find self. You do all these peer pressure type behaviors. At that age, if we really think about middle school, high school, we were very impressionable. And sometimes, if you were raised in the church, sometimes if you had somebody behind you that kind of put a little seed in your head that said, listen, you need to, this is, if you do, you know, where you felt convicted about the things that you did, then things would look different. But if you really sit back, we didn't always make the best decisions at that age. And you weren't thinking, oh, my God, if I do this, I can die. You know, you kind of think you're invincible at that age. You think you're not going to get caught, you know. And at 16, I remember doing things. I'm like, okay, well, if I don't get caught, I don't get caught, you know. So I didn't always live the straight and narrow life, and I don't really know no one who has. At that age, it's I think that we know right from wrong, but the ability to really sit down if the severity of situations are not quite there yet.
All right. We got about 3 minutes before you come back on the air to close us out, Ms. Claus. So let me go in. Benny from the block, let me give you this comment, and we're going to ask you to be brief because we got to move fast, you all. This female, she says, I believe there are triggers in life that can cause or contribute to anyone going off into doing something they may later regret. I mean, what about people who abuse other people who were never abused themselves? I think it comes down to a trigger or something. And, I mean, I know that the law even talks about voluntary manslaughter where, you know, if you walk in on your significant other and they're in the act of intercourse with somebody else and then you don't have a time to cool off. I mean, so what about – I mean, that's a trigger, you know. But how about people who at the same time can just turn and walk away and says, you know what, because I don't want to do anything stupid. Benny from the block, your thoughts on that. So when we talk about environment, are there triggers?
Yes, in 20 seconds. Yes, they are triggers. And the triggers can be in our minds, can be from our past, can be from situations that happened to us. That's how we respond to those triggers because something has gotten us to do that or we've already done that before, and so we're going to give the same response we do it every time. In the last 2 seconds, basically this. If you have seven people in a room and they're all negative and you're the eighth person, you come in, you're positive, those seven people are going to have such influence on you, they're going to start getting you to compromise who you are, what you are, and before you know it, you will become negative just like them because we have a feeling of wanting to be accepted in every situation. In the converse of that is true. If you're in a room with seven people who are extremely positive and you're negative, you come in, they're going to have some kind of influence on you that's going to have you shift a little bit, that's going to cause you to see things a little differently and become more positive. You may not necessarily become fully positive, but you're going to have a positive effect on you because of what you're around. In closing,
okay,
quickly, we gotta be conscious about our thoughts and our decisions. We got to understand we cannot allow ourselves to be pulled into negative environments. We run from negative situations all the time. A guy says something wrong to you, you run. Somebody else says something wrong to your job, you fight back, you fight. But when it comes to our environments, we kind of start to be accepting of things. We start to let things just kind of go past us and get past us because we want to be accepted in whatever environment we're in, or we just want to get through with that environment and try to move on past it. I know these kids ain't gonna never want to learn nothing, but I'm gonna give them the bare minimum just to get through. And that's just as bad as being the eighth person in a negative room with seven other people.
All right, certainly, Ms. Cross. Before you close us out, I want you to, Ms. Cross, you might speak to Abraham Maslow, father of modern psychology, when it comes to something that Benny triggered here, self-actualization and the need to be accepted. Abraham Maslow, and I'm sure you're familiar with him, father of modern psychology, as one of the theorists out there. Lady C, I want to bring you in and give you this final comment that we're going to be able to get to tonight, along with Ms. J. Both of you all take on this comment. When this person says, this female, she says, I've learned there are no guarantees in life that we as humans will always get it right, whatever that is supposed to mean or be. There's no guarantees that we're going to get it right. I think a part of the problem with social ills could be the fact that we the people are not doing enough to make the necessary impacts within our own communities to make them better. That's just my opinion. Lady C, let me begin with you. I mean, she says we're just not going to get it right. We're not doing enough to save our own communities. Your thoughts on that?
I kind of disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I'm only going to speak of the community here where I live, okay? The community here, they doing everything they can, but it's the people and the choices that's being made is what's stopping that won't stop the crime. So I don't necessarily say that the community isn't doing anything or they're not trying to have, like, good programs or stuff like that. The programs are out there, but the problem is, do you want to abide and follow those programs and try to make a difference? People don't want to make a difference. You always have those bad apples that spoils the bunch for the rest of them.
All right. We're going to answer standby. Ms. J, give us your final thoughts. And then Ms. Cross will close it out. Michelle, your thoughts on that? I mean, people are not going to get it right. She says the people are not contributing to their own community to make it better.
I think people want to get it right, but they do need to get out there and help each other and work more and stop labeling different people when you really don't know that individual.
All right. On that note, we are out of time. Ms. Claus closes out on the subject of, could your environment or your routine cause or contribute to depression?
Yeah, I'm going to have a full tank of gas. I got to.
Okay. Well, yeah, absolutely. Your environment can affect the way that you think, the way that you behave. You know, the thing is that, and I know a lot of us are saying it, it still comes down to choice, right? So we can't really choose the part of the environment that we were raised in. We can't even choose how people treat us, right? But we can choose how we handle the situation. And ultimately, you know, we have to, and as you did, Dr. Walker, I know you shared, you know, you could, we talk about kids mirroring behaviors. You don't have, behaviors sometimes can be mimicked, but when you take an intentional stance and say, you know what, I'm not going to travel down that road because I see what it can produce, then that shows you that there's possibility. And with there's possibility, there's hope, right? So even if someone goes down that path because of the fact that they chose that, that doesn't mean they have to stay on that path. So I think that's the takeaway.
All right. On that note, we're clearly out of time. I want to thank all of you all for joining us tonight on tonight's broadcast. And I want you to take away from that, you know, think about it. Could your environment or your routine cause or contribute to your depression or cause your behaviors that you're exemplifying? Listen, we're certainly out of time. I want you to join us here tomorrow night. If you were going to miss one of the shows, you probably should have missed tonight's topic, because tomorrow night's topic at 7 o'clock, you really don't want to miss that one. That's our spiritual show. The topic tomorrow night is, what is your mind's image? What is your mind's image of who God, the Trinity, is? You don't want to miss that show tomorrow night, because we're going to be discussing what's your mind's image. You know, different people have images of who God, the Trinity, is, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. The question becomes, what is your mind's image of who God, the Trinity, is? We're going to have a powerful show tomorrow night. You will definitely want to tune in. Set your calendars. And then this Saturday is going to be our miracle prayer day. You want to join us 6:30 Saturday morning? We've got a special speaker that's going to be talking to you all. You don't want to miss her. She's got a special message for you this coming Saturday. Miss Belinda Gamage, she's going to be joining us, and she's going to be talking about DNA. You don't want to miss that. DNA, you don't want to miss that one. Join us Saturday morning, 6:30 to 8:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we've got a show. I mean, you just don't want to miss that one. But please join us here back here tomorrow night. We'll cover some more of that. Listen, on that note, we're clearly out of time. I want to say to my listening audience around the world, good night, God bless, and thank you, God. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
God bless you all. Have a good night.